Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Welcome, one and all, to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here on another Wednesday night as we are broadcasting live on Facebook. And you can chime in with me on the show as well as the guests that we will be having in store for this evening through the Facebook chat room page thingamajigger there. And email works as well, fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. So if you have questions, comments, those are the avenues to use. Feel free to also find the show, past shows on Spotify and Google and Podcast Addict. And I'm thinking about all these other ones, Stitcher, a lot of platforms. The show is out there. This is episode 47, I believe, and excited to bring it to you live here again on another Wednesday. Last week, we had a great show, had a lot of fun talking with Josh Bergman, and he was a great guest. He was, or he is, a musician, plays guitar. I know there's been some outreach to help him out to keep his music going, so we hope that you can help him out. To find out more information on that past episode, like I said, visit where you can find podcasts on different podcast platforms. And we talked with Josh about the struggles of COVID and dealing with not performing live and how that's, you know, a huge way obviously for him to make money, but for his music to be known. But his music is also available out there on Spotify as well. So feel free to go ahead and find him there. If you haven't listened to that episode, please do, because I know it was being aired when there was the vice president, whatever, you know, where they argue with each other. That's just kind of how I call it. You call it whatever you want, but It always fascinates me. This is my little monologue piece as people are starting to log in, so I don't want to offend anybody. But I'm okay with politics, whatever. I don't think too many people know which side I'm on or whatnot, and I kind of keep it close to the vest that way, kind of on purpose. But for those that joined the live show, despite the fact that there was that happening last week, I thank you for that. And those that missed the live show but watched the replay, I thank you as well for that. But in my world here in Wisconsin, things are politically heated. I don't care for that, because I think it just kind of tiptoes into being too much like a faith base or a religion. And that to me is a little dangerous. So whatever side you are on, just make sure that, you know, you take it easy out there. Love each other, despite the fact you might see or think differently about your political views. That's my little monologue piece, because I know that last week's show, you know, interfered with the vice president, debate. That's the word I wanted, the debate. And I hope it was good. I hope the debate was good. I only saw the highlights or lowlights, however you want to put it. But that's always my cautionary tale, and I say it that way, and I tread lightly, because I don't like to talk politics, especially within this show, too much. But I guess my big PSA is vote. Whatever you do, vote. Vote, vote, please do. Whatever you believe is the proper way. So that's my little monologue piece. Tonight's show, though, is, I think, without any type of political issue in the way. You know, we're going to have Kent Drescher on, where this is the emotional side. This is the mindfulness episode that we try to carry each month. So as you know, we have a rhythm of featured guests and the mindful episode. And the next week, we have the physical side of FSHD, where we're going to have Mitch and Bill on. And Mitch has given me some exercises, right? He's given me some exercises to do. I kind of teased that last week, but for those that maybe missed it, I've been going through it every day, sometimes twice a day, what he's been giving me. And it's very, very strenuous. I'm working through it. But I actually do believe I am seeing small step results. They're exercises that have to do with my leg strength, flexibility in my arms, etc. So it's interesting. We're going to talk about that next week with him as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that episode, just like I'm looking forward to this one as well, because this is the mindful episode. This is the episode where we kind of want to hit the emotional side of FSHD. And we usually have had, you know, Jen Egerton, and I wanted to extend an invitation to others that are in this field. So I extended an invitation with the blessing of June Kinoshita, and we wanted to welcome in Kent Drescher, as I believe he's live on right now. Hey, Kent, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, Tim. How are you doing?
I am doing fantastic. I know you're doing better than good, because we're gonna have to announce this right away, because I know you're just bursting. Yeah. Kent had some fantastic news when I kind of call the guests before the show starts, get things set up, and one of the first things Kent announced was, I'm gonna give this to you, Kent. What is the big news in your family right now?
Well, we celebrated the birth of our fourth grandchild about an hour ago, right here in San Jose, California. Everybody's healthy. The only downside is that the grandparents can't go into the hospital because of COVID. So it'll be a while till we meet her.
That's awesome.
That is
awesome. Awesome news. And, you know, in this world filled with a lot of not so great news, you definitely kind of made my night. And I've never met your family, but I was happy so much for you guys and to hear the welcome news that we have another beautiful human in this world, healthy, considering the climate and what we're all dealing with, like you mentioned, with COVID. That's awesome. So congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah. And mom was teaching high school yesterday. Oh, my gosh.
So she's teaching the next day. Yep. Child. Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah.
Good for her.
They were hoping to make it till the weekend, but she didn't quite make it. So, she's been teaching remotely all year, and her class is well prepared for her being gone.
Awesome.
So it'll be great.
So for those that don't know who you are, Kent, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your FSHD story for those that kind of don't know?
Sure. Well, first I'll just locate myself. I want to say hello to all my fellow FSHD people here in the Bay Area in California. My wife, Susan, and I are the chapter directors for the Bay Area chapter. So I know that there's a few of our friends that are probably listening in. Mm-hmm. So I am a clinical psychologist that worked for 28 years in the VA Medical Center in Palo Alto. And I worked specialized in post-traumatic stress, working with combat veterans. For all those years, I did a mix of both clinical work and research over the course of that time. My FSHD was diagnosed in 1983 when I was about 28. I had had symptoms for at least 10 years prior to the diagnosis. I had even asked about the symptoms in my pre-college physical with my general practitioner, and he brought a resident in to look at my wing scapula and basically told me he thought that I'd been born that way, and not to worry. So nothing happened then for another decade. You mentioned guitar from last week, and guitar was one of my loves, and actually the symptom that led to my diagnosis actually affected my ability to play classical guitar. I started noticing that the three fingers, my middle ring and pinky finger on my right hand, had sort of stopped working. They were curled in. And I realized that one day when I was typing at work, and I looked at my hands and I was typing with seven fingers instead of 10. And I didn't really know why that had happened. It's like, what? And I assumed that I had hurt myself playing racquetball the week before. I had fallen and bumped my elbow on the wall and It was still kind of sore. So I thought maybe I had damaged it. And we went to the doctor, and the doctor said, well, I have good news and bad news. The good news is your elbow is fine. The bad news is I think you need to see a neurologist. And so then lots and lots of tests and a muscle biopsy later, it turned out that I had muscular dystrophy, and which was later clarified to be FSHD. So that's how it started for me. In terms of my functioning now, I retired about 2 years ago. I'm still ambulatory mostly. I walk with AFOs and for short distances. And if I need to go very far, I have an electric wheelchair that I use out and about if we're going shopping or doing things or even traveling.
Now, for you, was that a fast progression, Kent, when, you know, affecting your legs and the fact that you need power equipment, even, you know, for the longer distances, like you were saying, to walk? Is that something that happened kind of slowly, or is that progression quick?
It wasn't super fast, no. I'd say it's been a relatively slow progression over the last maybe 5 or 10 years. I was traveling a lot for work back around 2008 to 2012, and I was starting to notice, I wasn't even wearing AFOs at that point, but I was starting to notice more falling and getting really tired walking through airports. So, since then, it's been just kind of a slow degeneration of my legs. My symptoms started in my upper body and really wasn't noticeable in my legs until much later.
Do you still play guitar?
Not really, no. I have my handmade classical guitar. I told you earlier when we were chatting, right after my diagnosis and realizing that, I couldn't pick with my fingers anymore, it was really upsetting. And I ended up, I had a friend come up from California. We were living out of state at that point. And I sat at home with him because he plays classical guitar also. And so he kept it and played it for me for about 5 years before I could face seeing it again. And then eventually I went and picked it up and brought it home, and I still have it and just don't use it much.
Because I think that kind of keys in on a little bit, some of the subjects I wanted to talk about today with, mindfulness. And how we had a musician on last week where, Josh Bergman is, he has a brace, I believe, on his right arm as he plays.
Yeah.
His mandolin is his instrument of choice. He talked about the soreness and how difficult it is to play and how sometimes he can't even believe he can still do it. And I can't imagine, and I know I didn't even pose the question to him because I didn't want even to enter that world with him into what happens when you can't do it, because maybe he hasn't even thought of it yet or doesn't want to. So I don't want to ask him that and put him on the spot. But for someone as yourself that played classical guitar, obviously you enjoyed it. I'm assuming you were very good, even though I've not heard you play myself, but it's obviously a passion, something you enjoyed, and now you don't as much, or at least not the way you did. How have you come to deal with that kind of, passing away, so to speak?
Yeah. Well, I think that's something that's probably universal for people, not in everyone's different with FSH, but certainly everyone, as the disease progresses, experiences losses. Inability of things that are precious to them, whether that's walking, whether that's breathing, whether it's, the use of your hands, holding, picking up children, all those kinds of things are experienced as losses that are, every bit as challenging as other kinds of painful losses, like, deaths of family members and things like that. You know, something very close is gone and won't ever be back. And that's really difficult and painful. So yeah, I mean, I do think that's one of the elements that makes FSHD hard and challenging from a mental health perspective as well as a physical health perspective. Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the therapies that you use, I know you use something called ACT therapy, and we've mentioned mm-hmm. it. I know in the past with Egert a little bit, or Egert, excuse me, in past episodes. Yeah. But in your own words, can you describe the therapy a little bit for those that are unfamiliar?
Sure. So ACT stands for Acceptance and Commitment Therapy. And actually, during the conference that we had back in June, one of our keynote speakers was Christopher Graham from the university in Ireland. And he's just completed a clinical trial using acceptance and commitment therapy for people with neuromuscular disorders to improve quality of life. And so there's research evidence to support its use with FSHD, but also ACT is not a like disorder specific. You know, there are some specific treatments for like depression that have an evidence base. ACT is a much broader kind of a therapeutic approach. And so there have been clinical trials of using ACT for a whole wide range of human experiences, including psychological disorders, substance abuse, psychosis, lots of different arenas, relationship issues. And so ACT is really... it's not focused on like treating mental health. It's actually focused on helping individuals become more psychologically flexible. And we believe that that flexibility helps people with their very unique areas of human suffering, whether that be depression, whether that be anxiety, whether that be loss, whatever that might be, learning to be more psychologically flexible can help with that. So that's sort of a beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you probably have just barely scratched the surface of just the layers of it.
Yeah.
But I like
how
you phrased
it. Certainly tell.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, the little that I've looked into it and know about it, and maybe I'm looking in the wrong direction, but like a six care process, does that sound right?
Yeah. So there are what are called these core processes.
Core processes. Yeah.
And they're sort of bunched up into pairs of two. So you could actually think of ACT as being like a three-legged stool.
Okay.
Where each of those legs kind of support the therapeutic process. So the first of those legs you could call opening up. And I'll tell you a little bit about what that means. By opening up those processes that are associated with that, the first is called acceptance. And, you know, sometimes we think about acceptance as like being resigned to something, you know, kind of like, oh, I guess I have to accept this, right?
Right.
That's really not what we're talking about. ACT takes the perspective that one of the ways in which human beings suffer is in how they experience emotions and thoughts. You know, our brains are really wired to do amazing things out in the external world. Our brains are incredible problem solvers. You know, our brains allowed our species, you know, over the course of maybe 12,000 years, which in the scheme of things is really short, to go from you know, hunter-gathering, to an amazing technological society with huge innovations. And at the core of that is that our brains are really wired to solve problems. And language is a huge part of that. You know, so without language, if, you know, caveman number one invents fire, maybe he can show it to his children. And assuming they also have the ability to remember, you know, they can demonstrate it, you know, one-on-one with people, and maybe it gets passed down. But once language happens, you know, caveman number one can teach a course. He can describe how to make a fire. And then when language becomes written, he can write it down so that future generations will know how to do it. And so that part of our brains works really well in the world. It's hugely adaptive. The problem is that when we try to use the same strategies mentally that we use in the external world, they're not always as effective. So like in the external world, what do you do if you get cold?
I would grab a blanket, jacket, right? If I get cold, layer up.
Or you, if you're outside, maybe you go inside, you get a coat, you get a blanket, you turn up the heater. We try to control our experience. Okay. And if we can't control it, then we avoid it. So if I'm outside and I don't have a coat and I don't have a thermostat, then I go inside. I avoid the cold and come in where it's warm. But the problem is when we try to use that strategy in our minds, when we have thoughts or emotions that are unpleasant. So maybe when I experience the loss of a guitar and that I get reminded of that loss, well, now I don't want to be around music.
Right.
And maybe I don't want to be around my friend who played music. And so I start to withdraw, pull away from things that were important to me. And it leaves this vacuum that I'm afraid to fill because it's painful.
But what if I replaced it? You know, if for you as guitar and that group of friends, maybe then it's a new hobby, and then that might produce, you know, produce different connections with people. I mean, is that a safe avenue to take, or is that just ignoring what the real issue is?
Certainly. So for me, with guitar, what's worked for me is looking at what's the underlying value. What did I get from playing guitar? Well, there was this ability to kind of share joy with people through music. You know, I got to be a part of weddings and other kinds of celebratory, you know, things. I got to perform and have people enjoy it. So that value of sharing joy still exists. I can't do that right now, but I can go to classical guitar concerts and bring my friends, and we can experience that together. I can go out to, you know, clubs where somebody's playing acoustic guitar and we can listen to music and enjoy it and have a great time. And so that value's there. But in order to have that value, I have to be willing, and that's this acceptance part. Another word for that is willingness. I have to be willing to have whatever emotions come with that. And so I may go to a classical guitar concert, and maybe the guitarist plays a song that I used to play, and I start to feel sad. Well, I'm still experiencing the value. I'm still having that joyful experience, but it's tinged by sadness. And I have to be willing to have that in order to continue with the value. And so that's a big part of that. So that willingness and not getting kind of fused to negative thoughts as though they're always true, that's a part of that opening up that I talked about.
Wow. Man, you unpacked a lot right there. And that's only one leg we've been talking about of this stool that you
mentioned. It's actually two.
It's two.
It's actually two. So willingness and the diffusion are the opening up process. The second of those legs is what you call awareness, and that's where the mindfulness piece comes in.
Okay.
So mindfulness, another way of expressing what mindfulness is, it's been defined as paying attention on purpose in the present moment without judging. Okay? And so developing a practice of being aware of what's coming up in the moment without evaluating it as this is good or this is bad, or, you know, because that'll take us off in a whole chain of thinking, you know, that's problematic sometimes. So it's learning to be in a sense of noticing, of being aware, and observing what comes up, you know, whether it's thoughts or emotions or memories or whatever. And as you notice them, you just simply take note of it and then return your attention back to whatever you were focusing on. And that really is that mindful process. And when people can develop a practice, an ongoing practice of being able to be aware in the present moment, it opens up space for us to make choices, to make decisions, to notice, I'm feeling sad. Well, why is that? I just heard the music that reminded me of playing guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what am I going to do with that? I can make a decision. Is there something I can do now to express that value that's connected to that sadness? And I can be willing to have the value and live the value and do the value, but only if I'm willing to also have whatever thoughts and emotions are, you know, still attached to that experience.
Wow. You're blowing my mind here.
That's the awareness.
Yeah, because
so that's,
well, yeah, so, yeah, so sorry to interrupt, because I keyed in on when you said, you know, when you're paying attention or when you're concentrating on something and then like a thought enters your mind that's distracting from maybe what you're focusing in on, you know, then yeah. I was immediately reminded of meditation. That as
absolutely,
I've tried to look into that on a surface level, not just for myself, but I'm actually trying to teach a little bit of mindfulness to my baseball players and visualization and these mm-hmm. things. And mm-hmm. when I tell them to meditate, you know, I'm stealing obviously from people that I'm being taught this by. I'm not the meditation guru, but one of the things sure. I heard was, well, when you're meditating, that doesn't mean your mind is empty. You will get the thoughts that will distract, but you acknowledge it. And you said that. You said you will acknowledge it. It's almost like you slide it aside for the time being and then get back to focus. So is this really, I mean, does meditation walk hand in hand with this?
Sure. You know, mindful meditation is a thing.
Right.
Absolutely. So a very simple mindfulness exercise would be a simple breathing exercise where you just sit and you focus your attention on the air as it comes in and out of your nose, as you breathe in, as you breathe out. And you simply notice that. And you do that for a while, and inevitably, thoughts start to arise. You know, your mind starts to get bored, and it'll mm-hmm. tell you, I'm bored.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your challenge in mindfulness is to notice that. You could even say thank you to your mind. Thank you for that thought that you're bored. And now I'm refocusing my attention back to my breathing. And then you'll have some other thought, you know, what am I going to cook for dinner? You know, or did I leave the stove on? Or, you know, whatever it might be. Our whole, you know, chain of constant thinking that happens. And the challenge is not to judge that. That's a normal experience. You know, when we try to focus our attention, our mind continues doing what it does. And so it's a matter of just being aware, noticing, my thoughts have drifted away. And so I just notice it. I said, thank you for the thought. And now I'm back to my paying attention in the present moment. And so doing that even for a few minutes can be really refreshing. But it's not so much that it's like for the purpose of relaxation. It's for the purpose of becoming, being able to be aware in the moment what's going on inside of me. So that when I notice I'm having, you know, some painful emotion and my mind is telling me I got to get the heck out of here. I don't want to be around anyone. I have the space to notice that thought, to notice that emotion and make the choice that I want to make. You know, if running away is one of my values, then that's okay. But if running away is counter to my values and how I want to be living in the moment, then it gives me the opportunity and the space to say, yeah, no, I hear you, mind that's telling me to run away, but I'm going to choose to do this instead. Mm. And that's kind of the third leg. Mm. So the third leg of the stool, besides opening up and awareness, is what we call doing what matters. So a part of doing what matters first is knowing what our values are, what's important to us, what are the things that we care about, and then looking for steps that move us in that direction every single day, day after day, step after step, of living our values. And, you know, If you wanted to know why people who are depressed get better with ACT, it's because living our values is where we find meaning and purpose and fulfillment in living. And having meaning and purpose and fulfillment doesn't mean we won't get sad, but it means that depression won't be controlling us because we're controlling us. And we're living the way we choose to live, doing the things that are important.
Now,
and so that's why ACT is called behavioral treatment, because ultimately all of these processes are about changing what we do and becoming more intentional in the things that we do and in the way that we live.
Now, when you mentioned that third leg, you're saying, you know, doing what matters, knowing your values. And mm-hmm. let's say I'll use myself as an example because I guess I'm the host. I'll use myself as an example. So let's say sure. Coaching is not just, sometimes I find it's not just something I like to do, but actually kind of becomes right. part of who I am. And let's say FSHD sure. takes that away to some major degree, maybe not completely. I don't know if that's possible, but the physical aspects right. of being present there or acting out some type of movement for an athlete to do, and I can't. And then it becomes almost maybe, could it, I feel like if that is now something that I know is part of who I am, something I do that matters, and if that goes away, how do I not get depressed because that's gone away because of this disease that I can't control, right? I didn't choose it.
So I would have to ask you to dig a little deeper about what, mm-hmm. what is coaching about for you? Is it simply imparting baseball skills?
No.
Or is it having an impact on the lives of young kids?
Right.
And teaching them values that will last them for a lifetime? Well, that's something that can continue even if you can't swing a bat.
Right.
You can still find ways to live that value and to express that value. It may be a little bit different. Just like I can still get around in the store, but instead of doing it walking, I'll ride in my chair.
Right. Right. Know? So you're still getting the job done. You're just changing it, but the core principle is the same. You have to shop. Well, you're right. So, and I've always said that you're right. That for me, the coaching is I'm trying to teach or cloak life lessons within a sport.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they think, oh, I'm learning baseball.
And that's the value of
but I'm not.
For kids, right?
Right. Right. We kind of trick them that way, Kent.
I know.
Right? You're right. And but, you know, not all coaches are the same, but that's a whole other side subject. But you're right. I mean, that's where I truly get the enjoyment is that, hence why I even talked about, you know, trying to at least scratch the surface of mindfulness with them. And these players are 12 and 14. You know, there's a couple different teams I work with. And or even when I private coach, it's like, well, where's your head at when you're hitting? Or, you know, what are you thinking about? And this and that, because obviously that is the wave of where things are going in athletics. So I want them to be ahead, but I also want them to maybe tap into that skill if they get anxious about a test or maybe asking somebody out on a date and they've never done that before, you know, for the older players and this and that. So, I get your point. Yeah. And I think I like it, but I'm not going to lie. If I ever couldn't swing that bat to show, but yet I still have to try to figure out how to do it. That will be
tough.
It
would certainly be sad and painful.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And how else am I supposed to motivate them if I don't swing a bat at them? No, just kidding. So it is then a little bit of what you're teaching is get to the core of it. You know, get to the core of your issue, the core of your value, your true core values. And what is it about? Okay.
Yeah. And for most values, there's multiple ways that those values can be expressed. You know, ACT uses the idea of a compass as a way of understanding values. So, like, how far could you go west?
Like forever, right? So till you're going east?
You could travel west all the way to California and then cross the ocean to Hawaii and to Asia, and back around to the East Coast and back home.
Right.
But you could still keep traveling west, right?
I suppose.
That's how values are. Values are not like goals. Goals are things that you can check off your list. You know, you have your to-do list. And certainly goals are a part of values, but they're not values. Values are things that can be lived moment by moment, day after day, forever. It just takes the creativity to figure out, well, what are the actions that I take that express those values? Because values that just exist in our head don't exist. You know, values
you
exist
when
they're lived.
Right.
Yeah.
It kind of goes back to the practice what you preach, or just don't say it, show me, right? It's actions speak louder than words.
No, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the things that sort of challenged me, but also excited me about ACT, it's very experiential. And so it's not really easy to be an ACT practitioner to help other people with ACT unless you're using it yourself. And you know, that's not a common thing for psychologists. Or mental health providers just generally, you know, most of it, mostly we learn how to do this stuff when we do it with people, but it's do as I say, not as I do, you know, and ACT is different. It has been for me. And, so it's actually over time, didn't start out this way initially. I learned it more intellectually at first, but it's come to be a part of how I deal with my own struggle with FSH and with the other kinds of challenges that life brings.
Do you work with people that have FSHD currently? I know you said you were retired, but do you still some work?
Yeah, no,
with
I'm not. I'm not doing any kind of private practice or anything like that. I'm certainly open to talking to anybody that wants to, but I won't be your psychologist. Nor will I charge you money.
Oh, that's good. That's good. That's good.
Okay.
Good. Yeah. Cause now that I have your phone number, Kent, I'm just saying, you know,
that's right.
I also keyed in, going back to that first leg when you talked about opening up, and you mentioned the word acceptance. And when I thought about acceptance, immediately I thought, I think some people, including myself at certain points of my life, that acceptance word also equals defeat.
Yeah.
So how can separate the two? Because they are not really equal. I mean, one word is not the same, but it feels like defeat if I accept it.
Right. So I don't want you to think of acceptance as being mental consent. I really prefer the word willingness, and it's willingness to have our inner experience, whatever it is. So oftentimes people will go to great lengths and even unhelpful lengths to avoid a particular inner experience, whether it's their mind telling them that they're stupid and that they're worthless, or whether it's some painful emotion that's associated with a past trauma or something else. Avoiding those experiences, those inner experiences, isn't very fruitful. You know, have you ever tried to stop thinking about something?
Yeah. Usually you try to stop thinking about negative things, right?
Right. No, like if I just told you to think about, do not think about a white gorilla. And I tell you, no matter what, over the next 5 minutes, do not think about a white gorilla.
Yeah.
Well, how do you know if you're thinking about a white gorilla? Mm. Well, you have to call up a white gorilla to see, am I thinking about it? You know, stopping thinking things just is not really very effective for very many people. Mm. It doesn't work. You know, our mind is a thought generator. I mean, it's what it does pretty much 24/7. You know, I guess the thoughts that are happening while we're asleep are what we call dreams, but our mind generates thoughts. Mm. And we don't have a lot of control about what order they come out in. Any of that. But the challenge is the more, and there's actually research to suggest that the more you try not to have something, the more you have it. So like, if I told you, I would give you $1 million, I'm going to hook you up to the most accurate lie detector in the world, so sensitive that it can pick up even the minutest piece of anxiety. And if you could go for like 10 minutes without having any anxiety, I'd give you $1 million. And then I put a gun to your head.
I might have some anxiety.
You will always lose. Yeah. We don't have control. We can try not to have an experience, and the more we try not to have it, then the more anxious we get about how we might have it, and then pretty soon we have it. Hmm. And that works with not just anxiety, it works with other kinds of emotional experiences too. And so But the most common thing that we get taught as kids is to control stuff. You know, so if it gets cold, you get something warm. You control your environment. But when we try to do that with our emotions, the more we try to control them, the more out of control they get. And so willingness is an alternative to that. Willingness is not the same as wanting. So I don't want sadness that's associated with my guitar playing. But in order to live the value that's associated with that music, I have to be willing to have whatever experience comes up. And sometimes what comes up is sadness. But along with the sadness becomes the meaning of being a part of something that I love dearly. So it's like ACT used as a metaphor of a monster. So if you want to think of the painful emotions or the thoughts that you struggle with, whatever those might be, as a monster, and you're in a tug of war with that monster. If you're in a tug of war with a monster that's stronger than you, what's the solution?
Let go of the rope.
That's right.
Right.
And so if
right?
you can let go of the rope, you have right. to be willing to let go and to walk away. Once you've let go of the rope, you can choose where you want to walk, right? But the problem is, the monster may walk right beside you. And you don't have control over that. But you do have control over what you do and where you go, as long as you've let loose of the rope. As soon as you find you've picked up the rope again, then you're stuck in place. You can't go anywhere because the monster's stronger than you.
Right. Wow.
And that's really sort of ACT in a nutshell.
So it is acknowledging the fact that you might feel sad about something, or acknowledging that this makes me feel anxious or down.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yet, you know, still moving on despite
perspective
it.
Perspective that human life has suffering. That pain is a part of human existence. But additional suffering that comes from trying to control our inner experiences, that's optional.
Is this something though that you find, you know, it is tough for people to put into practice, even though it's very apparent, especially in your explanation, that this is a huge benefit to do so, but to kind of work through these things, is it a difficult path?
Yeah. In the sense that it requires daily attention, it's almost like a discipline. A physical discipline, and that's why mindfulness and making mindfulness a part of one's life. You know, it requires, you know, daily attention. So I guess I'll be vulnerable. So my current struggle during this whole COVID period has been with weight. But not because I'm gaining weight over COVID. It's because my weight had crept up to a point where it wasn't healthy anymore. And so I've been using these ACT principles and mindfulness to help with my whole weight loss process. And so this started on March 8th for me when I got a really negative medical diagnosis. And now it's more than 55 pounds later. My blood tests are hugely improved. And I've had success doing something that I've struggled with for decades.
Wow.
It's not done.
Right.
Because the hardest part isn't even losing the weight. The hardest part is staying there.
Yeah.
And maintaining that kind of daily discipline, which hasn't been hugely difficult, but it has required doing this every day, and that's where the value is. It became really clear to me that health needed to be a value. That was bigger than pizza.
You must have bad pizza.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, no. I totally get it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's a small example. And I don't know if I'll succeed. I've lost weight a few times over my life. Mm-hmm. And haven't really, you know, kept it off the whole time, but so far so good. So
wow, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah,
man, congratulations on losing that. And I think you will keep it out. I mean, I do. I I actually have faith that you will keep it off. And in fact, you'll keep losing more because the way, you know, you can hear the passion and you can hear, you know, what you're saying, you know it, you believe it. I mean, you're in it. And I know it is hard, especially one that is teaching it or expressing it, to follow through with action. But, and you got my head definitely shaking, nodding. People are watching like, you know, what's wrong with Tim? Is he a bobblehead like on his desk there? Because, you know, it is spoken very, very clearly. There's not a lot of, you know, terminologies and gibberish around it. Now this is pretty, you know, simple actions. I mean, putting them in action is the difficult part, it seems. But, you know, especially when you're using analogies like it's a three-legged stool, it's opening up, it's awareness, it's finding what matters. And the fact that you said that your health became that value, you know, I instantly then put the two together. Oh, that's the third leg of his stool. That's what he's talking about there. So that to me can be easily, you know, translated into what is your value and then create this act, therapy for your life, you know. I mean, am I translating that right as a layperson such as myself?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. No, that's exactly right. And if people are interested in ACT, there's a publisher called New Harbinger Press.
Okay.
And if you just search for New Harbinger Press in Amazon and maybe ACT, you'll come up with probably 20, 25 books on how to use ACT related to all sorts of different life challenges.
How about though, if somebody wants to
one of the most recent has.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, what if someone wanted to find, like, you know, a therapist that knows of these therapies near them, or, you know, virtually for that matter now, these days, to try to connect with them? How do they find that?
So there is an association. A professional association. It's called the Association for Contextual Behavioral Science, ACBS. And on their webpage, they have a find an ACT therapist. Hmm. So they have listings of therapists all over the country, actually all over the world, that use ACT in their practices. Hmm. And some information about them. So you can pretty much search any large city or state and find several ACT practitioners. So that's one way to start.
Okay. And I interrupted you with your thought. What was the thought you had there? Or did it drift?
What was I going to say? So I lost it. But if people want to reach out, if they have questions, certainly have them send me an email. They can send it to the Bay Area FSH chapter.
Perfect.
Website or email address if they want.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah, they can easily find that.
And Sue said that Jen Egg just posted the ACBS link on the page.
She's all after it. Thank you, Jen.
Hi, Jen.
there's a gentleman by the name of Dan. Most recent book he comments, is that a book that he's talking about that you helped make, or is it something he's just referencing something else?
My friend Dan is on.
Yes,
that's
he is
great. Some of the work that I did at the VA had to do with a construct called moral injury. Mm-hmm. And a couple colleagues and I did just publish a book on ACT for moral injury.
Wow.
That just came out in June or July. I'm like the second or third author. So you can see that. You search for ACT for moral injury, and it'll be on Amazon.
Nice.
I'm not hawking the book. I just
well, and I kind of hear Sue in the background. I think she's your agent as well.
I guess so. Yeah.
That's great. Kent, this was an incredible conversation. And I know we have something like this that we talk about, you know, each month, and I know we'll have you back on again. I know in the future, I think you've started to create quite the fan base throughout your practice. I know a lot of them are watching and listening in, and I'm so blessed to have your time today and for you to share your message. My notebook, I always leave a little bit of blank spaces, you know, to continue my notes. And I ran out of room about 20 minutes ago, and I started writing sideways and crooked ways. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so many nuggets of wisdom here. I mean, not just for this or my life with FSHD, but what I'm hoping to accomplish even in my, you know, coaching world and things I can help with my family and stuff. So many great things that you shared today. I really appreciate it.
Well, this has been a blast talking with you, Tim. I've enjoyed it a lot. So thank you.
Awesome. Have a great night. And congratulations again on the new member of the family. Thanks for sharing that happy news with us when we started.
Okay. Well, thank you. And once we get a chance to hug that baby, we'll give her an extra hug for you.
I appreciate that. I appreciate it. Please do so. Thanks again, Kent. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
So that was the amazing Kent Drescher talking to us about therapies and ACT therapy in particular. Loved the conversation. There was someone that commented as I scroll up to kind of find that again. We talked about, and I kind of wanted to, you know, key in on it before we moved on to the events and things that are coming up with FSHD as we close up shop, but when I talked about acceptance, you know, could equal defeat, and Kim Lun, or Loon, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your last name right, L-U-N-N, commented, thank you for that. My husband feels the same way. If he accepts the disease, he gives in or is defeated by disease. It is so hard. It is so hard, because I'm with you on that, Kim, and your husband, that it is a fine line. If I give in to this, does it own me? You know, and it's tough. It is a tight rope to walk, but I think you have to walk it and have to understand the difference, especially after what Kent has said and shared with us today, that it is okay to recognize those feelings. It's almost important. It's a necessity. You have to, for part of the process to work. And then it's not necessarily defeat. It's just, you know, acceptance, just clearly what it is. Is awesome. Good stuff. It's definitely one I'm going to listen to again take more feverish notes. I guess I should have warned everybody, but I didn't know, right? Get your notebooks out and make sure you have a sharp pencil or extras or plenty of ink in your pen, because like I said, if I mean, this is just gibberish. My little notebook is just insanely written with all the nuggets. A lot of fun. I love those kind of interviews. I thank Kent for joining us and sharing that wisdom. And thank you, too, for Jen Eggert, who has joined us in the past and was joining us tonight and adding all the plugs. She was like a little producer there, a little mini producer. I totally appreciate it. She plugged the book, The Moral Injury Workbook, that is out, that Kent helped author. She had put down the plugs for Find an ACT Therapist. Awesome stuff. So thanks, Jen, for doing that and being available to help us out with those plugs. So if people want to visit those, they can. What is in store, right? Before we close up shop, I always like to kind of tell you a little bit about some events that are coming in the FSHD world. As I grab my copy on that, FSHDU with Molly White is on the 15th. That's tomorrow, folks. She's the vice president of the medical communications and advocacy for Dyne. She's been on this show in the past, and I think she'll be revisiting again. I think we have her on the docket again to do that. On the 17th from 2 to 4 p.m., oh, I'm sorry, the FSHDU, I think that's at noon. Check FSHDSociety.org for the exact time. On the 17th from 2 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, the LA chapter meeting with the Bay Area and San Diego chapter joining in is an imagination vacation, the mobility challenges and things of that nature they're going to talk about. So check that out. That's all done virtually, I believe. Then on the 24th of October, it's the UPIN Family Conference Program. Utah Director Allison Calder is part of that. It's a Utah program of inherited neuromuscular disorders, which is what UPIN is. Learn more about that event and detailed information at fshdsociety.org. Plus, we have the monthly meeting coming up for caregivers and sharing hour on the 27th of October from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Want to find out more information on this, or if you want to search Kent Drescher's amazing chapter and email him, you can do that all through fshdsociety.org. Next week, we're going to talk about the physical side of FSHD, where I'm going to have Mitch, and I think Bill is going to join us as well. And Mitch just has bombarded me with exercises, I think like a dozen. I do them daily, sometimes twice a day if I feel motivated. I think now if I use this ACT therapy and make that one of my values, I think I actually might be able to achieve better goals within the exercisings by using the two together. See what I did there? I think you can do that as well. So thanks again to Kent Drescher for joining us, and thank you all for joining us and being part of the show. You've been listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.